Darkwraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Autumn Semester 2014. Lecture 25, delivered on December 3, 2014. The title of this lecture is Review for the Final Exam.
Today, review for the final exam. This is our last time together before the final exam as a happy family. And I will do what I can to let you know about the final exam, and then it is incumbent upon you to ask me questions. One thing that I do want to make sure is that by the time we're finished with this review, you have a couple of skills, one last shot, to make sure you have a couple of skills down pat. Let's start with this. The structure of the final exam is identical to the structure of the two midterms. Part one is multiple choice, Part two is workout problems. Part three is short essays. Part one is 30 multiple choice questions. About half of them are copy and paste from exams one and two. Most of the others, I've taken them off the exams and changed numbers if they were quantitative types of questions, like an NPV question, a treasury bill question, something like that, just changing numbers. And then there will be some that are new. You've never seen them before. You have no idea what I'm talking about. No, there's nothing new on the final. It all covers material that we've already been through over and over again. Now, part two is seven questions. Every one of them is a question that was already asked with different numbers on one of the exams, exam one or two. There is no new type of problem. The structures are the same and everything. Part three, you will answer five of seven possible. Four of the seven, I said five last time, it's four of the seven, are drawn from exams one and two. They were questions in the essay section from exam one or exam two. And then there will be three that are material that we covered. I probably actually already brought it up as a possible question, but they are not ones from the exams already. Backing back through for part one, I anticipate, obviously, that you're going to know how to calculate a net present value and an internal rate of return, just like I did on exam two. You need to know the relationship between risk and return. Know about, returning back to net present value, know what the internal rate of return is relative to the net present value. So if you discounted a project's cash flows, let's say at 9%, and you came up with a positive NPV, again, you discounted cash flows at, let's say, 9%, you came up with a positive net present value, what can you tell me about the internal rate of return? That's right. Because what you know, is that the profile of the graph is like this, and you know that 9% was on the top side. So you know that the internal rate of return hit above 9%. Show me that you know that. I'll ask that on the exam. I will. I keep looking up there to see if the exam is showing on that. I told you about the time I didn't realize that the screen was showing. Man, people were writing fast. Know the relationships with a bond. Like, for example, what happens as the yield on a bond and the coupon get farther apart? Know what happens when the yield on a bond and the coupon get farther apart. So, for example, let's say a coupon was 6%. The yield was 6.5%. Now, that's going to mean that that bond sells at a discount to par. But as that yield, let's say that yield starts to fall farther and farther, what's that going to do to the price? Is the price going to get closer to par or farther from par? Yeah. Know that relationship, okay? Because I'll probe it to see if you understand what the relationship is, price, yield, coupon, and even time to maturity. Remember, for the first exam, I asked a question about, or I was talking about, as a bond comes closer to its date of maturity, what happens to the price of that bond? Unless it goes to zero, unless the company is bankrupt, yeah. But, you know, in that case, it goes closer to goose egg. Okay. Know the relationship between the cost of equity and the cost of debt. Know the relationship between price and yield. That was, I think, like the first or second lecture I talked about that in this whole course. Back when we were all younger, we were optimists, we saw the world with rainbows and unicorns. You remember that? No, you don't. Okay, neither do I. The hell with Puff the Magic Dragon. Make sure that you know about beta, all the different things about it. What is it measuring? What are the hallmark points on beta? What does a beta of 1.00 mean? What does a beta of zero mean? Is there an upper bound on beta? Is there a lower bound on beta? Know those things about beta. Know what creates leverage, financial leverage, and operating leverage. Does cost of goods sold create leverage? Say no. Good. Know how to calculate the price of a one-year treasury bill. That was exam one. It's an easy exercise, but it's also easy to make a mistake, and I will have as one of the multiple choice answers the mistake. I've given you a series of formulas in this class. The component cost of capital formulas, cost of debt, cost of new, existing equity, cost of new equity, CAPM, I guess I already said, what the risk-free rate is, all those different formulas. What I will do in a couple of different questions is I will, in one question, I'll say which of the formulas below is, and it's one of the, the cost of new equity. And I'll just give a list of different formulas. You've got to find the one that's the right formula. Or, and then I'll do it the other way. Here's a formula. What is this formula? I'll do that in the multiple choice. Know the different the components of the risk premium, default, maturity, and illiquidity. Know what a risk-free rate, is in a risk-free rate too. Make sure you know the difference between systematic risk and non-systematic risk. And remember that there's another term. What's the other term for systematic risk? Come on, come on. Huh?
Credit risk.
hit him. No, shoot him. What's the other term for systematic risk? What did it say? No, that's risk overall. At least you gave me an answer. What else? What is it? It's called non-diversifiable risk. It's in the system. It's okay. You've got okay, chunky Jesus. You have a nodule.
Okay.
Okay, a nodule. Now I've got a really nice pocket knife. I can cut that off. There you go.
Okay.
Okay, that is diversifiable, non-systematic. It wasn't inside of him, but now it turns out. What's a disease?
Ebola.
Ebola. You've got Ebola. Okay. That stuff is nasty. That's inside you. I'm not going to try to get rid of it. I'm just going to put you in a hazmat suit and put you out for the dogs to have fun with.
Then the dogs would get Ebola, though.
Well, that's okay. You know, I mean, that's kind of cool, though. You know, like having a dog named Ebola. Yeah. But, yeah, you see, systematic risk is inside. You can't get rid of it. Now, I actually know the answer to this, but how many of you read the article that I had suggested that you read and my comment on it? Okay. No, fool. But the point I was making, and I actually got a nasty email from someone, but the point I was making is the term, oh, we beat the market, has no meaning whatsoever in finance. Yeah, you can beat the market any day of the week. You just have to be willing to take on a whole pile of risk to do it. Specifically, you have to take on a whole pile of systematic risk. Good for you. You did it. You beat the market. But someone, well, this person didn't beat the market. This person sucks. No, that person probably just has a conservative portfolio. The beta of the portfolio is probably somewhere way less than one. There's no hero status in beating the market. It's unless you were actually able to beat the beta of your portfolio. Yeah, that would be a little cool. But just saying, well, he beat the market, that doesn't mean much. That doesn't mean anything at all. I'm not impressed by that at all. So when it said, well, finance people who are brokers, they are not beating the market. But these gurus in IT and all these high-tech fields, their portfolios are beating the market all the time. Ha, ha, ha. Aren't they intelligent? No, they're just taking higher risks. They're young, they're stupid, and they are just taking higher risks. Sure. And then you get old, and then you don't take risks anymore. About debt, make sure you know the different kinds, the different terms, like the difference between a bill, a note, and a bond. And at the same time, also know the difference between who is the issuer that is the seller. Issuer and seller are synonymous here. And who is the buyer or the purchaser or the investor. All three of those are synonymous. Buyer, purchaser, and investor. So in other words, Microsoft issues bonds. Well, they are the seller of the bond. The lender is the investor who buys the bond. In fact, when a bank lends you money, it actually is the buyer of your debt. And it also, interestingly enough, it is an investor. Not really anymore, but okay. Make sure you know about the Federal Reserve. How many governors, how many district banks, how many voting members of the FOMC, the whole nine yards. Make sure you know that, and you can go back and watch that cheesy video if you don't remember, or listen to my great podcast on it. Guarantee, I'll ask you a question about open market operations. A contractionary open market operation and or an expansionary open market operation. What's being sold? What's being bought? Supply curve moving? Demand curve moving? What's going on? I did it on exam one, and I'll do it on this exam two. It'll probably be a fresh question. That will be one of those that's not exactly something from the exams, but it'll be in the same flavor of those. And Federal Reserve goes, make sure you know the three duties of the Fed, and make sure you also know the three tools of conducting monetary policy. And almost handing you a question, make sure you know the difference between regulation and supervision. And also make sure you know what the Federal Reserve is in charge of and what it is not in charge of. I went into a kind of a rant on that about what's the banking regulatory system is in the United States. There'll be somewhere in the exam, there will be a question in the multiple choice probing your knowledge of business organizations. Sole proprietorship, partnership, corporation, state of domicile. When are you a foreign corporation? When are you a domestic corporation? So if I were to say Microsoft is a domestic corporation, what would you come back with to show me that I don't know what I'm talking about, really?
It has majority of its profits offshore?
No.
Why not? Isn't that true?
Well, it is, but it has nothing to do with this. Domestic, you would say, domestic in what state? Microsoft is domestic in its state of incorporation. It's a foreign corporation in every other state of the union. Okay? But on that other point, that is simply that expatriate thing and all that. Make sure, as far as financial ratios go, you have a sense of how financial ratios play out. In other words, you should never have is this true or false? A company should never have a net margin below 1%. True or false? Say it. What's your gut? I even described some corporations. Yeah, there are corporations that are incredibly profitable, incredibly successful, that have net margins, in other words, net income divided by sales, that are below 1%. Some have net margins that are 30%. It has to do with the industry and the characteristics of that industry. Massive, insanely large, multinational, big fixed asset corporations tend to have low net margins. But because their sales are in the hundreds of billions of dollars, a 1% net margin is still a hellacious amount of money. That's enough on that. I obviously, I'm never exhaustive in these. Well, you didn't tell us about that. Well, yeah, I did. I did a lot. Okay, part two. Now, Friday night, I will put up a document that will have information for two different problems. You'll have information for a marginal cost of capital problem, like you did on exam, was that one or two? Well, exam two. And then you'll have information pursuant to a problem from exam one, like that was on exam one. So in other words, there will be a marginal cost of capital question in part two, and there will also be calculate financial ratios problem in part two. Would you like to know what the corporation is? Would it help you if I told you right now? Oh, no. Hell, I ain't going to look at it. Okay, I won't.
Tell us.
Huh?
Tell us. Yeah, it'll be helpful, yeah.
Kroger. Kroger. Let's go Krogering.
And the years would be 2013, 11, and 12.
My goodness, you're a pushy young man, aren't you? And I will also ask you a bond question. Just like I have twice that some of you still refuse to get right. So we're going to do one again here together after I go through the rest of this part two. You are also going to do a find the price of a share of stock, just like you did on exam one. It will be very similar to the question on exam one. You'll tell me the discount rate, and B, you'll tell me the price of the stock, just like before. Another question on the exam, in part two, I'm going to have you calculate a loan payment. I'm going to have you calculate a loan payment. And I am then going to have you calculate an effective yield.
You should put all the
parts in that line. Bite me. My fantasy was that with all this talk about computerizing the interwebs and schools and all that, I could actually have computers at everyone's workstation in a 200-student class, and you could actually do part two online. It would make it a hellaciously lot easier for me to grade, but I also know that there'd probably still be people who put commas in where they're not supposed to, and I'd have to grade them on by hand anyway. No. Oh, Lord, no. Okay, you're going to have one, like on exam two, finding the degrees of leverage and telling me where the volatility is coming from, just like on exam two, different numbers, another company, small company, but it's, you know, the DOL, the DFL, DCL, what's causing the leverage. And then you will also have one of those problems that was a quiz, and then there was one on exam one where I'll give you the sales, the cost of goods sold, interest expense, and all of that kind of stuff, and you're going to report to me holy cow, I got a mistake on this exam. Boy, that would have made it easy for you to answer the question. Okay, yeah, it will be a find the gross income, operating income, or net earnings and all that kind of thing. Just like it was on exam one, you also had one of these on a quiz too, as well. So this should not be anything new to you. It's just arithmetic. It's just accounting. And we know how important accounting is. Okay, now, before I go on to part three, there's your information. ARBC 6.60%, 2034, callable in 2024. Now, before I go on here, ARB, what do you say? ARB is what? The Arby's. Oh, for God's sake. No, it's the trading symbol. Although now that you mention Arby's, that would sound really good tonight. You know, those giant Arby's with extra horseradish. Yeah. What's the C stand for? Without knowing any more, what can you tell me? That's a rating. One of the rating services gave it that. What do you tell me?
Junk
is such a nasty word. We say it is not investment grade, okay? No, don't do that. That hurts people's feelings. It's not investment grade. But okay, now we've done that part. So now let's take it through the grinder here. A, if the cash flows from this bond are currently discounted at 9.80%, quote the bond. What is the quote? B, if the quote is 103.25, what is the YTM? And C, from part B, what is the YTC? I'll be damned if you're going, anyone's going to get the problem wrong on the, talk to me. For A, what is the N? You put key in 20 times 2 because you always assume semi-annual payments. Unless I were to say something else, semi-annual payments. So there are 40 coupon payment periods before this bond is finished. Going down, I percent. For part A, I've given you the I percent. So you key in 9.80 divided by 2 because there are 2 compoundings a year because the checks are cut twice a year. So it's 9.80 divided by 2. Now you leave the price value alone because that's what we need here. And you go down. What are the payments on this bond? You take $66. That's 6.6% of face, which is $1,000. So you take $66 and you divide that into 2 checks a year. Divided by 2. And then you make sure that you have a face value of $1,000 because at the end of this bond's life, there is a future value waiting for you of $1,000. And then the rest of it, 1, 1, and down at the bottom, you make sure that toggle is on end here. And so you go back up to PV, the price value, and you hit alpha solve. And what do you get? My ass. What do you get? Geez, that is junk. Yeah. 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 It's you'll see on the calculator 721.65. Now that's not what you write. First of all, there's no negative. If I ask you for a quote, you write 72.17. No dollar sign. Don't put a dollar sign. This is just a straight up number that we're talking about here. It's a quote. It's 1/10 of the price. If I said, what's the price of the bond, you'd put a dollar sign on it and give me just what the calculator told you, $721.65. Now, clearly, you see that this bond is selling at a massive discount to par, which was why I was telling you it's a CCC bond. It's just not investment grade. You see how much the market says the coupon should be? The market's saying the coupon should be like 9.8%, and the bond is actually paying only 6.6%. This is junk. It is junk. It's not investment grade at all. And so you get a really low price on it. Okay. Now, let's turn the problem around. We see in the second one, now when we've got the quote, we're seeing that the quote is at a premium to par. So somehow this bond has rehabilitated itself or something. Did a nice reorg or something, I don't know. So in this case, you're going to leave a lot of the information alone. All you're going to do is go up to the price value and change that whatever was there to 1032.5. That's all you need. Oh, to negative. I'm sorry. Negative 1032.5. That's all you're going to do. And then go up to I percent and say alpha solve. But remember, it's going to report to you a 6-month yield because you gave it everything in 6-month stuff in terms. So you're going to have to scroll over to the end of that and hit times 2. And then you should get 6.5. There's your yield of maturity. Now you see here, notice now that this bond was selling at a premium to par, which means the market thought the coupon was a little too good. You see that? The market's saying, you didn't need to pay us more than 6.31%, but hey, we're happy with 6.60. You're going to have a lot of buyers lining up for that bond. That's what's going to push the price up above par. Now, yield to call. All you have to do with the yield to call is go up to N. Leave everything else alone for God's sake. Just go up to the N and change the N to the call. This thing calls 10 years out, so you do 10 times 2. And then go back down to I percent and do the same dance you did before. So what do you get when you do that? Should be closer to 6.60. What is it? 6.16? I meant farther. 6.16. That's all you do. And you've got some nice points on this exam for what is basically maybe 30 seconds of work. I mean, you can't get a deal like that at Walmart. Really. And don't lose points on this leaving off percents and time signs and all those kinds of things. Don't give me the opportunity to be an ass with you. Give me this dollar signs, the percents, the time symbols, and all that good stuff, and you don't have those points off, which kills some people. Okay. Bond, you've seen it? Now, I want you all to get it right. Now, let's go on to part 3. Now, in part 3, as I said, You'll have seven. You have to answer five. Now, of the seven, four will be drawn from exam one and exam two. So all you have to do is know how to give exactly the right answer, and you got all the points for four of the five, and then you're down to one that could challenge you, but I'm sure you'll get it right. Don't give me incomplete sentences. Don't give me misspellings and text language. Do it right this time. Go ahead, yeah?
They're going to be exactly the same from one
to two. Yeah. Copy and paste. I mean, you think of me as Pizza Hut. I deliver. Okay? Anyway, don't worry. You never have to take me for a class again, so this is the end of it right here. Okay, look. I've given you the book quotes, and the reason I do this is when you go out there, you hear this thing, well, think out of the box. Give answers that aren't in the box. Well, you're going to be surprised at how many of your bosses are going to be pissed off at you if you don't know what's in the box before you start thinking out of it. And that's why just give me short answers that are clear, complete sentence, and just walk away. I said this before, it's not always true, but if you're going more than two lines on an answer, you're probably off track, or you're giving me more than I need. Say what you have to say, stay frosty, and just get out what I told you is the answer. And if there is a disagreement, and I want to point this out like I did at the beginning of the course, if the book says something other than what I say, the book is a lying mofo, okay? Lying to you, okay? If I ask you, what is finance a subdiscipline of? If you say the book, it's part accounting and part economics, I will eat your ass. I told you finance is a subdiscipline of economics. Okay, another thing was the book said some weird thing about weighted average cost of capital is a combination of debt and equity that maximizes the value of the firm. That's something that maybe Barney would say when he's on meth. No. It's just a technical thing. And most of these are just technical answers. There's no creativity involved. We don't get creative unless we're drunk, okay? And then we just get in trouble. We write bad poetry. So here we go. Now, you got four of them. Just know the answers to those four. Know how to structure the answer dead on. And you'll just make it easy. The easier my job is in grading, the easier my job is in scoring. Okay, now a few others that might be worth you keeping your eye on that you haven't, might not have seen or a variation on it. Explain a contractionary monetary policy. What are the three kinds of money? And which one is predominantly used in modern society? Again, what are the three kinds of money and which one is predominantly used in modern societies? A related question, which has a different answer, what is money? What is opportunity cost? And what is its role in finance? What is liquidity? What does it mean? What does liquidity mean? Distinguish between diversifiable and non-diversifiable risk. explain the three terms in the risk structure of an interest rate. Explain the three terms in the risk structure of an interest rate. Get that written down, and then I'm going to say something about it. That looks like a real heavy question. It's as easy as pie. 3.14159, never mind. It is as easy as pie. It is, if you look at the question right off, it looks like that's a deep question. I'm not asking a deep question. Do you know what the word term means in arithmetic? What does the word term mean in arithmetic? Do you remember? We went to high school, was a long time ago. A term is one of the things that adds to other things. Okay, so when I say what are the three terms, in other words, there's something plus something plus something, what are those three somethings? That's all I'm asking. And in here I could also ask, what are the three duties of the Federal Reserve? Or I could ask, what are the three tools of monetary policy? Those could show up in the multiple choice and or in the essays. And I could ask you, what is the most efficient way to beat the market? What is the most efficient way to beat the market? And the answer is so easy. And if you know the answer, you know more than that idiot who wrote that article for that important newspaper. No, don't you dare tell an answer, or I will put laxative in your cookies. Oh, okay. I thought you were going to answer that. You better take risk into account. You better. But of course you take that into account if you mention the word that's the second letter of the Greek alphabet. Well, that's good. Someone knows the Greek alphabet. Alpha, beta, gamma, delta, sigma.
Hi, beta.
Hey, omega. Yo, rho. Sorry. That one. Hey, kappa. How you doing? Anyway, at the Kappa Cabana, yeah, Barry Manilow's at the Kappa Cabana. Don't fall in love, yeah. Well, God, you people are weird. I'll just be so glad when this is over. Okay, now your turn. Ask me questions about this exam. Again, I'll have office hours. Now, the ones tomorrow, it'll be 12:30 until 2. And then I'll have office hours on Friday. They'll probably be from about 12:30 until 2:30, something like that. I will put up the announcement tonight, though. Now, there is a student evaluation. You fill that out before you walk out of this classroom so that everyone can know how bad this was. But for my part, that's all I have for you now and forever. I thank you.